Ahoy, ahoy. Welcome to Head Games, the science and psychology of sports. I'm Dr. Brett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Our guest today is a professional soccer player for the Austin Bold FC in the USL. He recently appeared on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list, no big deal, and has gained notoriety for creating A Frugal Athlete, which teaches athletes to manage their finances, Amobi Okugu. Amobi, welcome to Head Games.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's a pleasure. And that's probably top three intro I've ever had, so I really appreciate that. Thank you.
We got a lot of practice, but you have quite the resume. And we were talking before, like, should we start him off with like a softball question or should we just go for it? I think we're just going to go for it.
We got to just go for it. It's Head Games. That's what we got to do.
That's right. That's right. So why do professional athletes go broke?
How much time you got?
We got 30 minutes.
No, I'm just kidding. No, so there's a number of different reasons. And, you know, before I, you know, go on and, you know, I'm a professional athlete, so I feel like I could speak. I don't want to generalize, but there's a number of different factors, you know, lack of financial literacy, you know, coming into money, you know, when usually it's our first jobs, you know, sometimes we'll do like little side hustles here and there. But it's kind of hard telling a 18 to 22 year old kid, you know, don't touch the hot stove, you know, so that, and then you got emotional blackmail, you know, taking care of your family and friends. And I'm not here to say don't take care of your family and friends, but you got to do it within reason. You know, there's another number of other reasons as well. Bad spending habits, not understanding what's coming in and versus what's going out, bad investments. You know, as athletes, we tend to be that competitive nature, forces us kind of to be greedy. So it's like, you know, we had a great season, but we want more. We had it, you know, we made the national team, but we want more. And that kind of translates over to with money and it, you know, in the locker room, you know. So me being a rookie, I can't compete with the guy that's on his third contract. His money is a little bit different, but the fact that I'm practicing against him every day, I'm competing, that has a false sense of, no, I could spend like he's spending because I'm going to get there, but that may not always be the case. So there's a number of different factors and it's different for everybody. Fortunately, as time has gone on, there's been more talk and more avenues to, you know, kind of avoid the common misconceptions that are with athletes and money.
Yeah. So
that's a great summary.
It seems like part of what you're saying is it's a keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
There's something going on. Guy gets to a team. He sees dudes driving in nice cars, having nice things. He wants to sort of fit in, that there's a norm of this expectation of like living this kind of high life. So you said this a little bit, but what can you do to combat that?
It's tough, but you gotta stay grounded. You gotta understand what works for you. And, you know, the reason why I started Frugal Athlete is because we can use athlete stories to tell different things when it comes to the finance space. So for example, I'm a defensive center mid. So I'm not going to be the guy that's going to be scoring all the goals, you know, dicing up all the players, but I know my strategy and what works for me. And that's why I'm effective. That's why I've been able to play in the league. And that's the same way I can compare it to finances. So what works for me, I personally like long-term investing, blue chip stocks, because I can understand it. That's what works for me. It may not work for the next guy who's into crypto or Bitcoin or NFTs is like recently popular, or it may not work for the other guy that's into real estate investing and wholesaling or, you know, flipping and selling or, you know, REITs and all these things, or someone that's into day trading. But the best thing about, you know, money management and personal finance is there's so many different ways to the top of the mountain. And if I get away from my strategy, the strategy that's working for me, just like on the soccer field, then I probably won't be as successful. And I think it's all about just staying in our lane. And obviously, you know, once we get comfortable in our lane, then we can kind of switch over and dabble into new things. But it's staying, becoming an expert in what we're good at, and then trying to build out other avenues. So that's kind of it from my standpoint.
I love how you put that. I love how you, I'm wondering if this is an effective, you know, have you seen this as an effective approach by saying like, map yourself as an athlete, map yourself to somebody else, like you're center mid, you know, you map your game after under other center mids and you work on that skill set. And I think the way you described it said like, okay, well, what is your financial literacy or your preferences for how you want to make investments? And then you use sort of like a prototype. It's like, okay, well, here's your salary and like, here's what you want to invest in. So this is what you should probably do. Is it sort of like, is it like a template that you present to people, like based on your salary and based on your interest, this is what I think would be best for you financially? Or how does that work?
No, that's a great question. I think it's almost based on, if we take it back to, you know, comparisons, you're based on your skill set. So if I'm doing, if I'm 6'6" and I run a 4.7, I'll probably be like a tight end. I'm not going to be a running back. So, you know, when, what I do is, you know, work with what I have, what I'm good at, and then what I like, depending on, and then going from there. So I think the basic thing is getting the basics down. So budgeting, saving, and then finding out investment strategy, because obviously playing soccer in the United States, we're not compensated as well as NFL, NBA, baseball, those people. But within that, we can, if we do it the right way, we can be really successful. So the one thing that I would like to focus on, sometimes we're not at that level where we can do those, you know, venture capital investments. But if we build that foundational pyramid, then later on down the line, those opportunities may present themselves. So it's just kind of understanding where you're at, and then, you know, not trying to get too much at one time. You know, a lady, she's a financial advisor. She had told me, like, some people don't even need financial advisors. And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, because, like, I can't help you with the amount of money that you're making. So first, you probably need, you know, to build your base first. And then once you get to a certain level, then you, you know, then you hire who you need to hire. It's almost like getting a barber. You know, people spend more time trying to get the right barber than they do the right financial advisor. So
yeah,
things like that.
But I actually don't like her answer, because it's like, okay, look, let's say I'm a midfielder.
Yeah.
And I make 90K a year, but you know what? One day I want to buy a house in Malibu. Isn't the goal of a financial, or like the job of a financial advisor, to help me goal set and get there? And it's like, okay, you're here now, and you're saying something that might sound crazy right now because you make, let's say, 90K, but like, let me goal set so we can get you there someday. Like, isn't that the philosophy of a lot of that? Like, I'm 18 years old. I'm a center mid out of North Carolina, and I want to be top, you know, 5 player in the league. Well, here's what you need to do. Here's your skill set that you need to have in order to get there. Like, mapping that to goal setting makes sense. Why not mapping this back to financial planning as well?
Oh, that's a great point. And, you know, when she had told me this, I was like, for real? And the way she explained it, she was like, you know, that 90K player is not even thinking of the goal setting part. They're thinking of, all right, how can I get into VC investments? How can I, you know, do what the top guys are doing in the locker room? Because they're talking about startups and angel investing. It's like, you just got into the league. First and foremost, keep the main thing the main thing. You have to make sure you're performing at a high level so that you can play for as long as you can. Because as you guys know, the career only lasts so long. So once you get established, you know, build the basics down. Okay, maybe down the road, because, you know, certain financial advisors only work with certain levels. So you might have to have like $1 million net worth for a financial advisor to even work with you, or $5 million or $10 million. There's high value net worth clients. And, you know, for example, I'm not there, so I'll probably go to the lower end, but, there's different levels, but I'm in the same boat as you. I was like, it's better to have someone to help you get there than wait and wait and wait and then try to find someone at that point.
Yeah. So you are the frugal athlete, right? So tell us about your lifestyle. Like, do you live frugally? Like, what's your kind of standard of living look like?
Yeah. So I'm pretty low key. I mean, I could tell a story. My rookie year, I didn't have a car, so I was carpooling everywhere. Luckily, I had a roommate, so we were saving costs then. I had like the flip phone, and it wasn't until I spilled water on it that I had to change it. But it was funny because my assistant coach at the time, he always used to joke. He's like, "You got signed in the first round. I know you can buy a phone." I'm like, "Well, this one works." And at the time, my parents were still paying for it, so I was like, "Why would I get rid of it?" So I used to get made fun of. I was like, always like the cheap guy, but I turned it into frugal to try to, you know, put a positive spin on it. But I'm low key, you know. I've driven my first car was my second year in the league. It was a Honda Accord, nothing special. I upgraded because the team had a discount at the time, the Audi, and then once the lease was up and the discount was over, I got rid of that. And, you know, then like my most recent car is like a used car. So I'm pretty low key, nothing flashy. I don't wear designer like belts or clothes. I mean, I do have some nice shoes, like, but I'm not too flashy. So I don't want to be the guy that's like, yeah, everyone else be frugal, and then I'm over here, not living what I preach.
Right. Is it, it's a psychology show. I feel like I have to say that a lot, Ben.
Every time. Yeah, every time.
I got to.
We're psychologists.
It just brought up, I think, an idea that, so in the beginning you mentioned there's a couple reasons why professional athletes go broke. And one that Ben brought up earlier, which does relate to psychology, is this idea of keeping up with the Joneses, or this sort of like social pressure. And you mentioned this in the last topic where you were talking about, you know, all these other guys are into crypto, but like, I don't make as much and I can't get there. It sounds like for you, not having to keep up with the guys that make, you know, X figure salaries seems to be easier than it would be for other people. Is that true? And like, is that the crux of it? Like, is it about coaching, you know, players who don't make as much to just say like, look, like, here's where you are. This is where you want to be. Look what I did. Like, I think it sucks that they have to brand you though as like the frugal guy or the cheap guy, right? Because you should be the model of like financial literacy, and like the standard is incorrect. The standard of just blowing your money when, you know, you don't make, if you make five figures or whatever it is not the right way to go about it. Does that resonate?
Yeah, parts of it for sure. I think with me is because, so I was fortunate enough, you know, to leave school early, sign a Generation Adidas contract. So it wasn't like, you know, I'm scrapping by or anything like that. You know, I was getting compensated, you know, fairly well in comparison to, you know, being a soccer player in the States. But if you look at the average professional athlete, you're not going to be a LeBron James, Tom Brady, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, Serena Williams. Those are anomalies. You know, they're going to be good once they retire for like generations.
Yeah.
So how, as an athlete, the average career is 3 to 5 years, some leagues is two. How can you leverage the capital that you make? How can you leverage the resources that you have as an athlete to live a life long after your career is over? So when it comes to being a frugal athlete, you know, how I'm always talking about how athletes can, my mission is to help athletes make, manage, and multiply their money through financial education and athlete empowerment. So how do we build revenue outside of our career? You know, if you're injured, you can't play, you're not going to be able to hit your bonuses. You're not going to be, you know, is starting, it's going to be harder for you. But there's so many other ways as an athlete to make money. And how do you build that?
Yeah.
As an athlete, you're able to open up so many doors, corporate sponsors, season ticket holders. How do you leverage these networks and these opportunities to find other things that you're passionate about? So when I talk about frugal, it's not always about money, even though that's the main point, but it's how can we be efficient? How can we be economical? How can we be prudent with, you know, the leverage that we have? You know, not a lot of people are fortunate enough to be in our situations.
I like what you said. I think for me, what just resonated was the word empowerment, and that in a way you're a symbol of how it works, or like the intelligent way that you're going about it is a representation for other athletes and, you know, and for people to follow in your footsteps. How do you balance that though? It sounds like running a frugal athlete and being this guy who's, you know, such a, you know, a role model for athletes that want to follow in your footsteps. How do you balance that and be a professional athlete at the same time?
No, that's a great question. And I know we spoke offline, you know, just talking about like systems and processes. So if, you know, a football player, Brandon Marshall, he's doing a great job of being an athlete entrepreneur. He says, if it doesn't get scheduled, it doesn't get done. So I'm big on Google Calendar and Calendly. I have to put it in there. Time blocking. So allocating, you know, time to do certain tasks and prioritizing certain days or certain hours to do specific tasks. So I'm not trying to do five things at once. That allows me to be more efficient, you know, building out the systems and processes. So, you know, how we got to connect, obviously we networked, and then from there we set up the link, and I try to make it as easy as possible for you guys to schedule. And then I try to make it as easy as possible if I were to schedule you, that you guys have your information. So we're not spending 10 emails back and forth. It's like, can you make Tuesday at 3? How about Wednesday at 11? It's like, nope, this is the days that you're free and I'm free. All right, we're good to go. So that's kind of big, but what I want to say though is, as athletes, you know, and I said it earlier, is we have to keep the main thing. Our performance is paramount. So once I'm on the soccer field, that's my main focus. I'm not trying to sneak off and take calls or anything like that. But we do have a lot of time off the field. And another athlete, he says, you know, sports is the only thing where you have a full-time salary for part-time hours. So how are we allocating the time, you know, off the field?
So the time is there, right? The time is there for you to use for these multiple kind of hustles, if you want to call them that. Being a pro soccer player, running your website, and I have another foundation that we'll touch on later as well. But psychologically, we're psychologists, what's it like to balance all those things, right? Do you partition them off in your brain so you can fully invest in one, invest money at a time? Or like, what exactly is that like?
It's tough, to be honest, and it's cool that you guys are both, you know, doctors in the psychology space, because I'll be like knee deep in something. I'm like, oh, wait, I'm remembering something that I like, a great idea that I need to write down. So I just like, I have a bunch of sticky notes all over the place. And I'm like, all right, let me just write that down. I get to it when I have that a lot of time. So my brain is like, I like to consider myself pretty creative. So I'm always like thinking and, you know, developing type of different things, but I try to hone in. I need to do a better job about that, but I try to hone in when I'm doing something, and then task it out for when I prioritize that specific realm.
Yeah. I think another interesting aspect of you engaging in this, and the other athletes you've mentioned as well, engaging in these off the field pursuits, is this idea of intellectual property and like who kind of owns what you're doing as you're doing this stuff, both as a Moby, but also as a player for your team and for your league. So what do you think about that? Like, how does that work? How does it shake out that you're allowed to do these things sort of on your own time, but you're also kind of representing your team at the same time?
That's a great question. I think, you know, when you play for a team, you're a representative of that team, the community, your family, and, you know, most importantly, yourself. So definitely whatever you do from a social aspect or a personal aspect, people are watching you, you know, as athletes, your natural role models, whether you like it or not. So what you do does have influence and impact. But when it comes to IP, you definitely have to protect it, because, you know, I've had the, some people will say unfortunate, but I'll say fortunate pleasure of playing for multiple teams. So just because I do something when I was at Philadelphia, it doesn't mean I can't take that same concept and bring it to Portland or bring it to Austin. So take ownership in things that you do, keep that IP, but also understand and kind of read the room or read the community. So certain things that I'll probably be able to do in Philadelphia is different than what I'll be able to do in Orlando versus Kansas City. So just understanding the environment that you're in and kind of reading the room, but also, you know, being authentic and owning what you do as a person.
Right. What, I mean, let's take a look at a dystopic future where team owners, you know, an owner of an organization that you play for says, you know what, Amobi, you're out there like you're promoting yourself, but actually you play for my team, and therefore I need a piece, or more than a piece, of the money that you are making, because, you know, you're wearing, and people know you because you're wearing our jersey, you know, and there's a piece of intellectual property that actually belongs to the team. What do you think about that? Is that fair? And do you think that is the future? Or do you really think that there's a way for athletes such as yourself, who are your own venture capitalist, your own, you know, entrepreneur, to have your space, but the teams and the franchises to have their space as well?
That's a great point. And I think we're seeing like shades of that at the college level. Like, that's why the whole NIL thing is kind of coming into effect. It's like, well, we're paying for your school, everything's free, and then now you want to make money. I know we may or may not get into that, but from the athlete, professional athlete standpoint, you're gonna cause a ruckus. If I don't want to use myself as an example, because I'm not. So I take like LeBron James and like the owner of the Lakers, like, you know, you're using our likeness, so we deserve a piece of that. It's like, yes, but you're also using my likeness to perform, and, you know, put banners up in the stadium, and fans are coming to see me play. So I would just try to be like, I don't want to say petty, but I'll just flip it back on the owner.
That's fair. Thinking about, I mean, well, again, man, LeBron's what,
37?
Yeah.
He'll be 37 December, or.
Yeah. That's right.
It'd be interesting to see what he's going to do after basketball, but flipping that to you, what are your plans after soccer?
Thank you so much for asking that. I want to be in the sports business space in kind of a strategy, business development, partnerships realm. The great thing about sports business is that, especially over the next 5 to 10 years in the U.S. specifically, it's only going to grow. I'm really bullish on it. So ideally, whether it's like a private equity or venture capital firm that's looking to get into the sports business space from, you know, investing or getting involved with franchises, I want to kind of be the glue or the guy that's, you know, getting the athlete connected to the company or the company connected to that brand or the brand that needs to, you know, kind of just be that facilitator of sorts. So I don't have like a specific job title that I can like give it, but basically business development and partnerships.
Yeah.
What does that specifically look like to you? Does that make getting guys to be sponsored or like, what exactly does that include for you?
So I'll give like an example. So say Redbird Capital, they're like a sports investment firm I know they have an office in Dallas. So they're doing a great job of buying up, you know, pieces of franchises. So ideally it would be like business development and investment relations for a company like that. Help scout opportunities all over the world if they're looking to invest in whether it's the sports franchises or sports companies, and then figure out ways to, you know, increase their revenue or figure out ways to increase their exposure so that when they decide to sell them or do this, you know, they need to make more money, I'm helping lead that charge. Or, you know, I did an internship with Uninterrupted and, you know, something like the athlete partnerships, business development. So say an athlete comes in, I'll just use myself, for example, and I have this concept of frugal athlete. All right, cool. How can we work with like a Visa or a Chase Bank and figure out different ways to activate unique opportunities for the athlete and create content, create marketing strategies around that?
Cool.
So hopefully, if anyone's listening, you can
hear that. Seriously, hopefully these companies will tune in. I mean, they're great for all of us, I think. I think the related question to Brett's is, what's the future of Frugal Athlete? Like, are you planning to continue to grow that? Like, what's the sort of business model going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question because I struggled early trying to figure out what I wanted to do from a business standpoint. But right now, a Frugal Athlete, I would love for it to be kind of the ecosystem. If you think of Penny Hoarder, Players Tribune, and Business Insider, I want it to kind of be encompassing all that. Mm-hmm. So you're learning cool. about financial literacy through athlete stories, and you know, you're able to apply it to your own personal financial playbooks. I've taken a cautious approach this year to kind of be forward facing and not just, you know, highlight other people, but also highlight my own personal stories. So now I'm kind of more like the points guy or the penny hoarder, where it's like a frugal athlete. Okay, a frugal athlete, that's a Moby, but he also shares stories of other people. So, all right. So the top 5 credit cards that I use for travel hacks, or, you know, the best side hustles that athletes can do without spending a lot of time. So I think with that, we'll create more opportunities and just create that, I don't want to say that community feel where it's like, all right, I'm always not just like telling other people's stories. He's like sharing his own, like, this is how he did it. This is how he made some money. So for example, how I made money putting my car on Turo, you know, a lot of athletes, they like to get the nice car. So this is how you can get a nice car without paying money. You know, we travel a lot, put it on Turo. When you're not using it, ship it out, and then you're paying your car lease or you're paying the payment for. So like sharing those stories, I think we'll be able to attract a lot of people, and hopefully I can do some speaking engagements and workshops and, you know, do the financial coaching as well. So sorry, that was kind of a long-winded answer.
That's a good one. So don't apologize. If you had to whittle it down to one thing you would tell current athletes, one piece of financial advice, what would it be? In a sentence, a phrase, a couple of sentences, what is it?
I would say compound interest is your best friend if used correctly. So if you use it from the investing standpoint and not the owing money standpoint. And secondly, I would say there's so many ways to make money without spending money. So as athletes, you can invest without investing in, like, so say venture capital, like, so you can be an advisor, you can be a brand ambassador, you could be a value add, and without having to put up your own money, because as athletes, we have a unique perspective. So say, for example, Peloton was really popular. You know, that's a unique way for an athlete. You know, we do cycling as a post recovery. These are the things that we like when we do cycling. The seat has to be at a certain level. This has to be this way. You know, the classes have to be, you know, if you can provide insight and provide value, a lot of these companies, if you do it the right way, they'll offer you, you know, equity stakes for your expertise. And it doesn't matter what level you're at, in high school, college, professional. Obviously, being a professional helps more, that there's opportunities for you.
The name of your foundation is the OKU Go Foundation. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so our main mission is to help children from low-income backgrounds with the opportunities and resources, you know, through athletic, educational, and social programs. I've been fortunate enough for each team I've played on, they've done an active or played an active role in their community. So, you know, always doing like some appearances and volunteer work. But with this one, it was kind of selfish, or not, I don't want to say selfish, but I always wanted to do something with my last name. Okugo, OKUGO. I just wanted to be able to do something in my own way and more active or more engaging. So right now we're not where we want to be in terms of as much impact as we can do. I had no idea a foundation was actually hard. I thought you could just volunteer and that it, but there's all this like admin stuff that you got to do and operational stuff. So I was like, I might have to just help do it another way, but no, it's been great. So we mentor, you know, kids at risk every other Fridays. We do soccer clinics. We're trying to do some more financial workshops, and hopefully we can start creating like a scholarship fund and different things like that.
I'm always impressed when people are able to apply their passion, their intelligence, and their savvy to noble causes. And you've got multiple noble causes that you are a part of in terms of, you know, improving the financial well-being of, you know, your cohort or other professional athletes. And then on top of that, you know, helping out youth, and you have your own foundation. And oh yeah, on top of all of that, being a professional athlete. So you are very impressive. And we've been very, I think, very lucky and very happy to have you on the show.
No, it's been a pleasure. And, you know, when it comes to the foundation stuff, I've been able to learn so much about, you know, myself, you know, helping these kids. Some of these kids, there's, you know, the things that they've been able to go through and persevere and, you know, just having a positive spirit, you know. And when I first, for the most recent group that I was, you know, mentoring, it took me like 3 sessions to finally earn their trust and like for them to share. And just, it was just a blessing to be able to like see the growth in those kids, and not only see the growth in them, but like to learn about myself doing that. So
yeah.
I recommend anyone to just give back in any way you can. It doesn't have to be like change the world, but anything helps, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Again, that's the OKU Go Foundation. If people want to reach out, and you are obviously you're in Forbes, but are you on Twitter or other forms of social media?
Oh yeah, I'm everywhere. Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Clubhouse, TikTok, Clubhouse. Not yet. Yeah. So I'm trying to be everywhere. Clubhouse. So, Adam Obi Says, or at a frugal athlete, you can find me, and I'm very responsive, you know, always looking to connect, always looking to collaborate. You know, a lot of people are doing a lot of great things. So how can we all help each other get to our goals?
All right. Please rate and subscribe where applicable. And thanks as always to our editing team for putting together today's show. You can find us on Twitter at HeadGamePsych. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine. And you can find that guy on Twitter at BD Rosenberg, PhD. And thanks as always for tuning in.